Hey, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. A lot of people have kind of trickled in, so before I get started, I wanted to just get a show of hands. I'm going to be talking about top surgery in trans women and trans men, and I'm wondering how many of you are currently doing top surgery in the audience? Okay, a couple. And how many are interested in having this become part of your practice or part of your institution's offerings? Okay. So that's helpful. So I'm talking mostly in a technical side of things, how to really optimize results. So hopefully this will be helpful going forward. I have nothing to disclose. So the goal of top surgery is to masculinize or feminize the chest wall in alignment with gender identity. Literature is clear and convincing that top surgery reduces gender dysphoria and improves quality of life. And when you see these patients preoperatively and you get to know them, you see the efforts that they go through every day just to go out the door. Binding their breasts is burdensome, it's painful, and doing top surgery really allows them to be comfortable in their skin. So when deciding who is a candidate for surgery, I refer to the WPATH Standards of Care version 7, which we just got a nice review on, so thank you for saving me going through this. But for top surgery for trans men and for trans women, the guidelines are very similar, with the exception of breast augmentation for trans women. There's an added recommendation of 1 year on estrogen, and that allows for some natural breast growth. And you'll see breast growth for up to about 2 years, but most patients are anxious to undergo augmentation after the 1 year mark. And I also want to mention the age of majority. There's a star there because in the version 7, there is a pathway for adolescents to undergo top surgery. And specifically, this is for trans men getting mastectomies, with the added recommendation that they be on testosterone for a year to socially adjust. So I want to talk about masculinizing the chest wall, and this is what I do the most of in my practice. So the surgical goals are to create flat contours. You want to highlight the underlying musculature. You want the scars to be hidden either along the nipple or along the pectoralis shadows. Also, you need to resize and reposition the nipple areolar complexes from female dimensions to the male position and the male dimensions. Prior to surgery, patients should undergo mammogram if they're over the age of 40 or younger if they have other risk factors. Smoking cessation is important. We include ceasing vaping and marijuana as well. Managing obesity certainly leads to better results. We don't have absolute cutoffs, but we certainly work with these patients to get to a healthy BMI prior to undergoing top surgery. And you should consider stopping testosterone. There's a difference of opinion on this. We don't stop testosterone in our institution for top surgery, but we do check a CBC, as many of these patients on testosterone can have polycythemia, which would put them at a higher risk for clotting. So I think to have excellent results, it's important to choose the right technique. And, patients come in on this spectrum of breast-tosis, and essentially, there are three techniques or three groups that I consider. Those patients with very minimal ptosis, so almost no excess skin on the lower pole, and high-positioned nipples, so nipples right in the middle of the breast mound, are candidates for minimal scar techniques, such as periareolar or circumareolar surgeries. Most, however, do have some excess skin on the lower pole, and for these patients, I recommend the double incision with free nipple graft. And this is the term the patients will come in using, double incision, and I'll show you what this is if you're not familiar with it. And then there's always patients right in the middle. I call them, hybrid techniques, and for them, you have to be a little more creative with your skin excision patterns. The double incision is what I do most of in my practice. 85% have some amount of excess skin that you just don't expect will shrink down with a simple periareolar incision. So I'm going to demonstrate and walk you through this operation. So this patient, although they don't have a lot of breast tissue, what tissue there is fairly low, and the nipples are fairly low, and I wouldn't expect this breast skin envelope to shrink down after just doing a mastectomy, and you're going to have excess skin. So for this patient, if you look at that blue line there, I think it's really important to look at where you want that scar to be, and that should be along the shadow of that pectoralis insertion. And so in this patient, you can see that the majority of the breast tissue is well below that line, as is the nipple position. So for this patient, a double incision technique with free nipple grafting is recommended. And here you have the result, and you can see we've achieved our goals. There's a flat chest contours. That scar is well hidden along the pec border, and the nipples are in a male configuration. I want to walk you through kind of some more technical aspects of the surgery. These are the markings that I do ahead of time. You can see the dashed lines on that top left picture. That's the footprint of the breast and where I can palpate breast tissue. The picture just to the right of that demonstrates I'm retracting the skin down where I visualize that insertion of the pec border, and that's where we want the scar to be, and that's a critical factor that I think gives good results. So on the bottom left, you can see where I've marked out that border. And then to determine that lower line, I just use a pinch test to estimate where that lower excision is going to be. And you can see that it's almost never along the IMF. If you cut along the IMF, that scar is going to be very visible below the border. So here's the patient positioned and ready for their surgery. I'm not going to go too much into detail here, but I do think performing the mastectomy, it's very important to preserve all the subcutaneous fat on the skin. You don't want to resect any subcutaneous fat, or you're going to get this ugly hollowing out at the chest wall. And so if you look here, that black line, when you elevate the flap, you stay right on that capsule, which is a lot easier in younger patients, but you can almost always see that capsule. And then here's intra-op. The left picture is looking down, and you see that lower flap, you have to elevate all the way down and beyond the IMF in order to have a nice flat contour, and then that upper flap goes all the way to the extent that you had marked previously. So once you perform the mastectomy, you sit the patient upright. That's why the arms were bound onto the arm boards. Get your scar right. You do some tailor tacking. Usually I adjust the lines a little bit. And once you're happy with that, then you turn your attention to the nipples. So at the very beginning of the case, the nipples were harvested, they were removed, and we used the size 2.2 centimeters, which conveniently is the size of a U.S. nickel, and we harvest them, and prior to placing them, you have to thin them out and thin out the areola, but leave some parenchyma centrally for the projection of the papilla. But where do you put them? When we first started doing these, you know, there's not a lot of good literature of where to place them. There's some complicated formulas, but they don't work really well in the operating room. So we did a little study. These are University of Utah medical students, all with BMI less than 25, all willing. And we measured where the nipple was in relation to the pectoralis borders, which is really what we're looking at sitting up in the operating room. So we measured out the lateral border and that inferior insertion and looked at where the nipple was positioned anatomically, and we found these average of 2.2 centimeters from the inferior border and 2.5 centimeters from the lateral border. So take that to the operating room, and using these stickers, you can get a pretty good idea of where that nipple belongs. And of course, we use your aesthetic judgment, because sometimes it doesn't quite look right on the body habitus of the patient, and make some fine revisions at that point. So you de-epithelialize that circle. We actually make it into an oval as it stretches, and so you need to compensate for that. And once you've placed your graft, you place bolsters, drains, and a vest, which all stay on for a week. So here's some results with that technique. You can see we've achieved our goals in this patient with a scar that follows that pectoralis line. And, you know, everyone's telling us, talking about how to place the scars. I like a gentle curve. Some people like them straighter. But I think as long as you follow that pec border, curve it up at the sides, you'll end up with some nice results. And these scars, this is an early scar, so it'll continue to fade. Here's another result where, of course, it's nice when it's a nice, thin patient, but if you curve that scar up on the side along the border, it can really fade well over time. This is an example of a more challenging case. When there's cleavage like this, I've found that you do have to resect that skin in the middle in a slight inverted V, and I think you can have nice results with that. And here's another example. Of course, it's really nice when the patient's got a lot of hair growth and your scars will really be camouflaged well. I want to talk briefly about the minimal scar technique, so periareolar and circumareolar. And I do this in about 10% of my patients. They really have to have almost no skin excess to have a good result with this. You don't want to do a minimal scar technique and then have to revise it if you have loose skin afterwards. So here's your ideal patient. You know, he's got almost no excess skin. He's got hair growth. The nipples are not excessively large. So for him, we made a small inferior periareolar approach, do a mastectomy. And it is challenging. You have to go through a pretty small incision and lighted retractors and get way up to the apex of the breast. But you can have a really nice result if you're patient with that. Now, this patient is also a good candidate for a periareolar. There is some excess skin, but he's got excellent skin quality, and you would expect and hope that skin will shrink down. And so in this case, we did the same technique Sorry, jumped ahead. And we ended up with a nice flat result. And this patient did go on to have a nipple reduction. Sometimes that bothers them. Through their T-shirts, the nipples can be seen. So this patient also has excellent skin quality, but you can see the nipples are in a relatively low position, and their areola are quite large. So if you utilize a circumareolar skin excision, so you incise around the nipple with a 2.2 centimeter circle and then an outer circle, you deepithelialize that, your final result, you can elevate that nipple and have really well-hidden scars and achieve a good result. But I think the message I want to send is the longer scars are always better than the problem of having excess skin. This is a patient who really, this came from an outside institution, but he really wanted minimal scars, and the surgeon gave him minimal scars. But then you have a situation that's very difficult to correct, and you need multiple revisions, and we ultimately switched him to a double incision technique. Briefly, just to address complications, this is in 300 of my own patients. The seroma rate was 5%, and these are all handled just by some simple aspirations in clinic, low infection rate. Important to notice that, though, for hematoma requiring OR washout, it's significantly higher in the periareolar group. 10% of the periareolars needed to go back for hematoma washout versus 3% with the open double incision, and it just has to do with having that really small access. So, also, with revisions, it's 25% requiring revisions. Now, some of these are very small, nipple reductions and things, but it's still a very much higher rate, 25 versus 5%. So it's important a conversation to have with your patients that, you know, if you choose smaller scars, you may have, you know, more hematomas, more revisions, et cetera. Briefly, I think I have a few minutes left. I do want to talk about breast augmentation, so feminizing the chest, and our surgical goals are to have feminine contours and lines proportionate to the frame of the patient, camouflage scars, and minimal animation deformities. Some institutions will stop estrogen 2 to 4 weeks prior to the surgery. This isn't absolutely established for top surgery. I think this is a discussion that we'll have more for the bottom surgery. UCSF did put out some breast screening guidelines for trans women, suggesting getting mammograms after the age of 50, getting mammograms after 5 to 10 years on estrogen, and screening every 2 years. So trans women who are on estrogen can develop some breast growth. This is an example of a patient who'd been on estrogen for about a year, but still anatomically the chest is very different from a female chest, a cis female chest. The nipples are in a lateral position. The areolas are much smaller. Also, the sternum is wide, and the pectoralis muscle is a lot thicker with a broader insertion. The base diameter is wide, and then the lower pull of the breast is typically short, constricted, and almost tuberous in appearance. The skin envelope can also be tight. So with that in mind, the surgical preferences that we recommend, normally you need to do an IMF approach. You can do a periareolar approach, but it's difficult to get a large implant through the smaller areolas. A subglandular plane is preferable with a thick pectoralis muscle. If you place that implant under the pec muscle, you have significant animation deformities. When you're choosing implants, it's important to choose a wide base diameter. You want to preferentially pick width over projection in order to cover that wide chest wall. And then finally, the importance of lowering the fold. And I'll show you an example of that. So a couple quick examples. This patient actually did have a periareolar approach, which is difficult to do, but if you use a Keller funnel, we were able to get in a 520cc implant. But what you can see is the importance of lowering that fold. So this is probably only 4 centimeters, and this is more like 8 centimeters below the nipple position. And here's a patient, he's 6'4". She is 6'4", with a base diameter of 16 centimeters, and so it took a 685cc implant to get a natural result with, and a subglandular approach is the only way you're going to get cleavage like that with that kind of a pec muscle. Sorry about the stickers there. That was our MA stars. And then finally, this is just an example. This is from our colleagues at NYU, but I wanted to show one that had a really tight skin envelope, and even without tissue expansion, in a subglandular plane, you're able to get a really nice result with an implant in a subglandular plane. So thank you.